All right. Welcome back to Cream City Dreams, the podcast where we talk to inspiring Milwaukee women doing their thing.
So Cori Jo Biddle is with us today. Cori Jo is the executive director of Fuel Milwaukee, formerly a Young Professionals, but now everybody, we're all welcome to their events that bring professionals together in Milwaukee to keep talent here. It's a part of the Metropolitan Milwaukee area. Crap.
The Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, MMAC.
Thank you, Megan.
Where she is also the VP of Community Affairs. So Fuel is sort of an underling or a part of the MMAC. And it's super cool. I was introduced to Cori Jo through some of these webinars that she put together, which we'll hear all about in the interview, during COVID, which were just thought-provoking, integrating, reflective, just a really neat experience in the city, or for our city, I should say. And we'll talk to her about those and how she got started with those, but just a super fun conversation about our city. Like, it just felt like we were loving on Milwaukee.
Yeah, she's really engaging, and I'm excited to check out those RaceBridge conversations, which still live on YouTube, and there's some coming up too. So anyway, yeah, I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, so let's just let our listeners in on our conversation. Cori Jo Biddle. We're really excited to have you. And I know initially Jonathan Brostoff introduced us. He's a friend and actually a neighbor and my alderman, and maybe more importantly, like a huge fan of our podcast. So yay. Shout out to Jonathan for this introduction. But I had heard of you and I knew about you because I sat in on quite a few of the RaceBridge conversations and Zooms that you had over the pandemic. And we'll talk a little bit.
How did you find them? Like, how did you find out about it? Because people stop me all the time and I'm like, how did you even know that we were doing this?
Yeah, how did I know? I was trying to think about that. And I think, did you maybe have some sponsored posts on Facebook?
Nope.
No.
How did you advertise it? Because I hadn't heard about it. So now I'm like, oh God, I got to go catch up.
So our membership has traditionally been, you know, like 30 and 40 somethings. So we used to be a young professional group and just have evolved into more of a community engagement for a local professional. So we have a pretty decent list of members and supporters that, you know, tend to go to our events. But I think because this was a webinar, more of them must have been sharing it.
Yeah.
We streamed it, like we put it on, we streamed it on Facebook and I streamed it on, you know, my personal LinkedIn. And I think people just must have been sharing it because there are so many people stopping me that I'm like, I know I've never seen you at an event. I mean, and that's possible. Yes. That people be at the event and you don't notice them, or they're like completely outside of the demographic, or just have said, I didn't even know about Fuel, but I've been to race. But I just think it's just so interesting that those conversations sparked such a sense of community.
Well, I think, and it was, so for our listeners who might not know what we're talking about, these are webinars that Fuel Milwaukee hosted, and you were you are the executive director of Fuel Milwaukee, which is a part of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. Right?
That's right.
Fuel is under that.
So we're branded separately. It looks like a separate entity to most people because the demographic that we were trying to attract, especially in our early days, was so much different than the membership of MMAC.
Right.
But we're essentially a department within the MMAC and we're their initiative. So they pretty much support everything that we do, but they're like really hands off and just kind of let us.
Yeah. And so, so one of the things you developed during COVID was these lunchtime, or maybe they were 2 o'clock. I can't remember these webinars that were just an hour long, and they were, you know, all about approaching race in our city and diversity in our city. And like, the one I remember for sure was like, what is it like to be a Black man in Milwaukee? What is the white person's experience of anti-racist work or racism in Milwaukee? And they were just like the titles were like, yep, I'll be there. And in part, cause I was homeschooling my kids. And I was like, I need an hour. I need a break.
Yes. Yes. You know? So I'll tell you when we started. So when we went into quarantine, a lot of our staff at MMAC was furloughed. So I transitioned really quickly into being a team of one. Oof. And before we were in quarantine, you know, MMAC and Fuel are very in-person driven mm-hmm. organizations. It's all about networking, convening people. And, you know, before this, that we, I mean, 100% of our events were in person. Mm-hmm. We're going kayaking. We're doing, you know, that's, you know, we're doing things together. So I wasn't really comfortable with Zoom and the webinar thing. It made me a little nervous because I just wasn't used to doing it. Mm-hmm. And George Floyd was murdered. And I remember seeing people talking about it on Facebook. And I had seen that before where there would be, you know, a shooting, a police officer would do something to a Black or a brown person. And there would be a little wave of people sharing the video or whatever it was. And typically it would be Black people or brown people. This time, though, there were so many people who weren't Black and brown sharing, either sharing the video or making a comment about what had happened in the fervor, just the level of anger and hurt and pain across the board of every color, background, ethnicity of people. I had never seen that before. Mm. And I remember looking at my Facebook feed and I started crying because I was afraid of what was about. I was like, what is about to happen? I felt like something was bubbling, but I thought it was going to be a lot more violent than what actually happened. What actually happened was a lot more positive, but I was really afraid. And I thought we have to have an outlet to talk about this. So I said, well, I'm going to put together a webinar to let people react to what has happened. And we did that one and I think 400 people registered for it.
Wow.
And it was just the reaction to mm-hmm. what has happened. We put together a panel. I think it was all young professionals, but it was a diverse group. Mm-hmm. And the comment section went crazy because people were either sharing their own experiences, how they felt. And then the more people opened up either on the panel or in the chat, the more people who didn't come from those Black and brown backgrounds were surprised and were expressing like, wait, what happened? You know, so then there became this dialogue and this opening up of information. So then I started getting a bunch of emails from people to say, oh, for your next one, you should do this topic. And I was thinking the next one, I thought we was gonna do. So I said, okay, I'll do another one. The second one was all about the Black experience, like what it feels like to experience racism or be othered. And it was a panel of, I think at that time, early days, I was really focused on Black folks because of the George Floyd was really what sparked all this. So it was people who were either full Black or biracial, basically they show up as Black. And what I was trying to show people is that it doesn't matter if you're biracial or not, if people perceive you as Black, the experience is the same. Mm. So I asked each of them, you know, when was the first time you were othered? What was the first time somebody called you the N-word? And to think you can ask somebody, what's the first time somebody called you the N-word? And they all had a response. Mm. And most of them were kids when it happened. So they all told that story. And then that sparked another wave of like, oh, you should do this. So then we just decided at that point, I thought we're going to be in quarantine. This is a worldwide movement at this point. And clearly there's no space, there's no safe space to have these conversations.
Yeah.
The way that we were having them. And I thought that we got a group of people that trust each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that they trusted me to kind of be able to broach these really uncomfortable topics in a way that, you know, I'm not blaming anybody for, we all have inherited this stuff. So mm-hmm. how are we going to navigate through it? You know, with responsibility for what we do and what we learn and what we know. So I was just sitting there in quarantine and my kids are like doing homework all around me and stuff. And I thought we're really bridging people together mm-hmm. through conversation. So let's just call it Race Bridge.
Yeah.
And just threw together a logo right quick and just, you know, and I mean, there was some topics where we had like 900 people show up.
Yeah.
And I was like overwhelmed, mm-hmm. really. And yeah, it just said to me, when you have that gut feeling that you should do something, man, do it. Like, what if I didn't do it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and it's a testament that you had 900 people coming. Like, that's it. That is a testament to how it felt to be on those calls, because it did really feel like a safe space to ask questions or to eavesdrop on people who were asking the uncomfortable questions that we all wanted to ask, you know, but maybe weren't, didn't feel comfortable yet. Although I think we've come away in our society that we can ask those questions now, yeah. You know, but it felt like you were really on the cusp of that. And so kudos to you. And for our listeners who don't know about these, they are all, you can go on YouTube. They're all up there still. You can go back and watch them. They're really, really powerful.
And you know, we're not done. We were doing them once a week for, it was once a week for a year.
Whoa. And I know. Honestly, I know. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's MMAC did webinars every day for a year, every single day. On the MMAC side, the focus was much more like business and how to navigate through quarantine. Wow. And on the fuel side, our programming is much more interpersonal relationships and how people develop a life in Milwaukee. So we could delve into a lot of the personal stuff, but there were so many topics that I could do it that often. So, I mean, it was just me. So I was like, you know, you get burnout at some point. So now we are going to have a season where we do Race Bridge in the spring. So we'll have four webinars. So we'll keep doing them throughout the year, but just not with that at that pace.
Intensity. Yeah.
That's great. You're going to do that this spring? You'll have a season this spring? Okay, cool. That's something we can put in the show notes so that people get connected to it.
This year, we're going to go, somebody said you should do something about interracial relationships.
Ooh.
And we started, it was just a group of us kind of standing there. And there was a Black woman is married to a white man. And then there were two Black women married to white men. You don't hear that perspective a lot, because usually you see it the other way. Mm-hmm. And we just started talking, and that conversation was just juicy. And I'm like, yes, okay. So this is definitely going to be one. And then I'm thinking about doing one that's kind of, sometimes I do like an offshoot of the Race Bridge. In this case, I would call it maybe Identity Bridge, and really look into how people identify gender identity, sexuality, all of those things that really make people uncomfortable. the things that I'm even a little nervous about talking about. And I'm like, okay, maybe we should take one episode and kind of get into this space so folks can be a little more respectful when we're in the asking questions mode, right? So my hope is that we create conversations that help people know how to respectfully be curious, ask questions, or get into a better place of understanding so they're not stumbling over themselves or being offensive to people. So I think it'll be a good one. And there's so many different directions for us to go. So
yeah.
I can see your energy for this. I'm curious, like, when you started out at Fuel, did you have any idea that it would evolve to this kind of content creation?
No, because where my passion for this topic in particular comes from, before I came to Fuel, I used to run America's Black Holocaust Museum.
Oh, really?
I ran that museum for 2.5 years, and it was the grand, well-funded version of the museum that thankfully we have now.
right.
I was there, you know, I was the one that kind of like, I was, you know, pretty young and didn't know what I was getting into. So they were like, ask her to run it. And I was just crazy enough to say yes. But we struggled so much financially, but we never really struggled having people go through the museum and see the exhibits, or there was always school kids going on tours. And in terms of racial diversity of who was in there, it was always a mix of people. I mean, it was a complete mix. So the conversations we were having, the founder of the museum, Jay Cameron, survived a lynching. Mm-hmm. And his story was very much around the Jim Crow era and the era of lynching, where thousands and thousands of people were lynched and there was never any justice for those folks. So that was really the center of his mission for creating that museum. So folks would come through there and see photos of men, women, children hanging from trees and in a festival-like environment, you know, white people kind of enjoying the view and bringing their kids and look, you know, and that was really shocking to people of any race, people would break down and cry in that museum. So we had to get really good at creating an environment that did, that was non-threatening, is, you know, what we, Dr. Cameron would say, this is a place for freedom loving people, regardless of what color you are, but you got to be able to come in here and process the information, process your emotions, and interact with people who are at different levels of understanding and relationship with this reality, right? So, you know, that's where I developed the skill to, I'm not uncomfortable with most conversations because I've seen them all. And I believe that most people are freedom loving people. Like, I think that the barriers between us are just because we don't have the intimacies that break down barriers yet. And we've just been created, you know, we created this world where there's this, we're othering each other constantly, but we're like so much the same. Once we realize that, we fall in love with each other. And then all of the, you know, racial prejudice, all of that stuff just kind of falls away once you really know somebody.
Yeah.
But when I came to Fuel, that network was all about young professionals. And it was largely, I mean, it was largely white. I mean, my very first day at work, we had an event at Mikey's, which was on Jefferson. It's not there anymore, but they had just opened. That's how long ago this was. This was 08, I think. They had just opened. And we were having an event we called Purely Socials. And I walked in the room and there were 200 young professionals. And I was just like, wow, like I've never seen anything like this. And then I realized that I had never seen anything like that because I was like one of three Black people that were there. And I'm like, oh, this is why Black professionals think that you can't really have a fun social life, because we don't know about these events. They're not really designed for us. You know, like I would have never known about it had I not been a part of MMAC. So what I really thought my job was going to be was trying to diversify. You know, my job was marketing. So I would do my best to make sure that the pictures that I took had like every Black person that was there, I'm going to take a picture of them. You put it up on the website. And if I used stock photos, I made sure that I used photos that were a reflection of Milwaukee and our real talent. And a lot of Black and brown people go into social services or government nonprofit work. And we're going to miss them because MMAC is very business focused. So if you got a corporate job, you would know about Fuel. But if you worked for a nonprofit, you wouldn't hear about it. So I was really trying to mix that up. I was trying to avoid talking about race because at that time, nobody wanted to talk about it. You know, like segregation has always been an issue. And I saw it as a reason why we had a hard time diversifying Fuel. And at that time, if I was bringing it up, people would roll their eyes, or you could see people shifting their chairs. They would get uncomfortable. We could have maybe one event a year where we kind of addressed segregation, but not certainly, we're not going to talk about racism or, you know, racial prejudice. No, we're not going to talk, you know, we couldn't go there. So that's why I thought Race Bridge was just going to be one or two. I was like, I'm going to be able to do, let me squeeze one or two out before these white folks get tired of talking about this. But it just never happened. They just never, they never got to the place where they didn't find value in it.
Yeah. What's insightful to me is just the moment was there for you to do the work that needed to happen, but you had to lay a lot of groundwork in order to get to that place and then have the courage to like new way of presenting information with the webinar, you know, like all of those little obstacles that keep people from actually doing the thing that needs to happen. You were able to kind of like overcome that. I'm just curious what supported that ability to answer the call, essentially, right? Like, this is what we need to do.
I think it was a combination. It was, first of all, I didn't know how many people were going to be watching it. Had I known that, I may have been a little more cautious in diving into it. The second part of it was, I think all of us in quarantine learned to just react and move more quickly. I think we took about 3 weeks once we were in quarantine. You know, the event we had right before quarantine started was we went to go see a play at the Rep. And I remember they were saying, there's enough spaces in here that you can social distance. And I was thinking, what is social distancing? I mean, this is how, like, we went to that play and the next day, quarantine. Everything was shut down. And I just did not know how to run a professional network without in-person events. Like, what are we going to do? So it took me like 3 weeks to understand Zoom, get it all set up, of course, MMAC is supporting us all the way, but I'm thinking, what's this content going to be about? So I started paying attention to what I was nervous about, what I was concerned about. I remember thinking I was going to be really like sick of my kids, but I wasn't, you know, that it was delightful having them in the house. And, but there were other things that I was nervous about in the early days. They were saying that, COVID, they very early days, they said Black people couldn't get it because it's like, our melanin blocks COVID.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yes. You know why?
Oh my God.
What stirred that was that the wave of it that went through Africa came so late that people were starting to believe that if you were Black, you couldn't get it. So they were like saying that. And then you would see like Black people running through the streets of France, like everybody, all the streets are empty. And it's like all the Black people dancing in the street because they thought they couldn't get it. So that was going, through, like, it was like internet lore, you know? And the other myth was that young people couldn't get it. So I kept hearing that and kept seeing that. And then seeing all the health departments around the world, like frantically trying to let people know this is not true. This is not true. So I said, okay, maybe this can be our first web thing. We'll do a session with our health commissioner. And I think David Bowen was the first elected official in Wisconsin to come down with COVID. And he was only like 30. At the time. But so the day that he was over it, that he was it had like went through his system, it was like 14 days or whatever, they had to quarantine, super quarantine for 14 days. So we got him on a call with the health commissioner, and that was like our first fuel event that was virtual. And of course the news covered it, and it was like 500 people at that one. So, I mean, I was nervous at first, but it's like, you just kind of build it and then whatever happens, just let it happen. But in every case, it was because I kept seeing something that made me feel like people need to talk about this.
Yeah.
People want to talk about this. And our network is about convening people. So I'm like, if I can't do it in person, then I'm going to do it virtually around the topics that are, you know, concerning. We did one on mental health and wellness, and you know, like how to handle your anxiety, and you know, methods to do that at home, or you know, what resources are available. I think like 600 people showed up to that one.
Yeah,
you know, so it was just
once
I saw the people's response, and it's a webinar, so I couldn't really see the people. I couldn't see them just number wise. I knew they were there, but the way that they were behaving in the chat, they were just interacting with each other. And I thought, yep, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah. So for a year, we did two webinars a day. The Thursday one was Race Bridge. And the Tuesday one would be some other, like we did a Tuesday one on curbside service, like these restaurants. How do you know, just stuff that people were trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're going to package it together and make it easy for you to learn how to navigate this piece of the world. And it was just me.
Wow.
So I learned, like,
with your kids running around.
So you know what? My kids were so good. Asha was, I think, 7 and Bean was 9. And I learned so much about, I'm like, they're so independent. Like, did you see that with your kids? Like that my kids are way more independent than I thought. Or than I was treating them, I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that. Maybe one of
them. We have to think about that. Yeah.
I know. We've got 3. So, maybe one of them. Maybe we're 2.
Yeah, I just have 2. Watching them get up and, you know, open their laptops and get, you know, and I'm like,
yeah.
Well, how do you know what a Google Meet is? Because they were doing all this stuff at school. Like, they know their student ID, like 9-digit number. I'm like, how do you know that?
They were probably helping you with some of the webinars. Like, mom, you need to adjust your levels.
I learned. So I'm like, well, you guys are way smart. And I'm over here cutting your apple for you.
That's funny.
That's great. That's great.
Well, so, and this is our website is called, I mean, our website, our podcast is Cream City Dreams, and it's all about women who are living their dreams. And I'm just curious, and the season three is about dream makers. And so we invited you because we see you as somebody who's making things possible for people in Milwaukee. But I just want to turn to you a little bit and ask about, you know, you grew up in Milwaukee. Was living in Milwaukee, was that part of your dream? Do you remember your childhood dream?
It was not. I was not going to live in Milwaukee. I thought I was going to move to anywhere but here. I didn't know. I thought that I was going to go to college somewhere and then just get a cool job somewhere else. I just never pictured myself coming back to Milwaukee. I think I remember one time going to a YMCA has this Black Achievers program for, I think these kids got to be, they have to be high schoolers, and they go on a college tour, Black college tour. They do a bunch of stuff together that's going to lead them to college. And part of it is that they ask you about, you know, they have people come in and they ask about your major and like, what was your coursework? And since I majored in English, they wanted me to come and talk about all the things that you could do with English, because if you don't know an English major, do you think English majors want to write, you know, the next great American novel and that's it, you know, and that, like, there's so many different things that you can do. So I'm telling them, you can be a proposal writer and you can write website copy and you can, you know, go into marketing or grants, you know, so I'm like telling them all this stuff. And I finally asked the group of kids, I'm like, how many of you are going to college out of state or hope to? And I like 95% of them, it was, if it was a group of 50 kids, like everybody but one kid raised their hand, I wanted to leave. And I said, well, how many of you are coming back when you graduate? Zero. None of them wanted to. And it just reminded me of how I felt when I was in high school, because I grew up on the north side near Havenwood, our state forest. And I played in Havenwood. Like, that was our backyard, and it couldn't, it doesn't get better than that. Okay. Like, we had a community garden. We used to play with caterpillars and chase toads and garter snakes. Like, I had a fun childhood, but I couldn't translate that into adulthood in any way, because, you know, my mother was a weight loss counselor at Jenny Craig, which was like the most exciting thing on the block. Like, ooh, Jenny Craig was a celebrity. She had commercials and my mom was wet. But I couldn't see anything past that. Like, that was the most exciting thing. And when we went to dinner, we went to like Ponderosa or Applebee's. Like, we never came downtown. So the grandeur of Milwaukee, a lot of it is in downtown. And, you know, we came on the lakefront, but we didn't spend tons of time at the lakefront. I just didn't have a really good sense of everything that Milwaukee had to offer to, you know, a young college graduate. I didn't picture it. So I ended up staying here because I got an internship at Manpower after I graduated from Mount Mary. Well, senior year, we got the internships in senior year at Mount Mary, and that turned into a job. And I got married very shortly after graduation. And we said, we Googled best places for Black professionals. And it was like this big list of cities, like 10 cities. And we said, we're going to pick one of these cities and we're going to go there. And that was the plan. I got the job at the Holocaust Museum after I left Manpower. And then when I left the Holocaust Museum, I went to MMAC. And I mean, I'm telling you, it was fuel that made me stay here.
Oh, wow.
It was like, what's that that hair replacement commercial where the guy's like, I'm also I'm the president, but I'm also a client. that's me and fuel. All day. Like, our job is to retain talent and to get people so engaged in the community that they don't want to leave. And I was busy doing that, thinking that I was going to leave. But I'm attending all the events and I was taking all the photos and I'm like interviewing people. And the more immersed I was getting, the more I was like, wow, I really didn't know Milwaukee. I really didn't know everything that was, you know, available to me here as a professional. So that's really why I ended up staying. Otherwise, I would have been in Houston or, you know, wherever else people go.
Yeah. Cause what was Milwaukee in that list?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No. No.
Nowhere near it.
Oh, there's a career goal, right? Get Milwaukee on that list by the time you retire.
Yeah, because it's honestly that it's the opposite. Like I think the new list just came out that Milwaukee's the fourth worst place for Black people. And then they have lists for children. It's like the third worst place for Black children. So the challenge with me now and the struggle is that I have kids. When it was just me, you know, I didn't think about some of these things because I had already overcome them, a lot of it. But for them, sometimes I think, man, this list came out, you know, worst place for Black children. And this is where I decided to live, you know. So as a parent, you question. Because I'm from here and I really don't know anywhere else. So I've just figured out how to make it work for myself and my family. But then I wonder, like, is there just some utopia for Black people out here that I'm just like not taking advantage of? Like, should I be having my children, you know, amongst all the Black rich people or something? You know, I do wonder, am I making their path harder for them than it would be? But sometimes it doesn't feel that way when you're from here. You know, it's like, what else do you know?
Right. Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any organizations or people, communities doing the same thing for kids that Fuel did for young professionals?
You know, that's a good thought, because I've been trying to cobble together these experiences for them.
Yeah.
And I managed to get them into some really good schools. That's the first network, but there's like Jack and Jill is like the social network for, I think it's just Black kids. Jack and Jill is for Black kids, but that's not always easy to get into, and you have to be referred and there's a process and, you know, then you gotta, like, oh, I could do stuff at the Boys and Girls Club. But it is like, you're doing a lot of jumping around and trying to cobble together these experiences. But I haven't found that to be, that's a challenging process. It is challenging. And that might be a good opportunity, Chilla. That's a good point. Because if we had something where it's like, we're going to have these great social experiences for kids that are really positive, and we could do many versions of everything that we do. Walk around with like glasses of juice and network with each other.
Fuel Junior or Rocket Fuel. I don't know.
I love it. Right. I'm thinking of Ashley Valentine over at Rooted MKE. You know, she just put a call out for support. You know, maybe there's a way for, I don't know, her to, I know that's part of what she's doing, right, is creating experiences for Black kids to see themselves in literature, and Black and brown kids. And, you know, that might be an interesting,
if a bunch of us just got together and put our heads together.
Yeah. You know, and you know, Venus Williams, at the table, she on our episode with her, she talked about bringing people together just to talk about their ideas, because maybe somebody in the room will be able to like pick up the, you know, that, that thread and run with it, you know? So there might be a way to
get
some of those conversations started.
That would be so fun.
I should reach out to Venus. My mother passed away. She had breast cancer about 5 years ago. And my first community garden was in Havenwood, because my mom got a plot. And so she taught me how to plant everything, really. She loved to garden. And I planted a zucchini when I was little. And she kept saying, Corey, it's time to pick the zucchini. I was like, no, let it get bigger. Let it get bigger. And it got so big that a deer had tried to bite it and couldn't, because it was so woody. And I have all these great memories of my mother and gardening, because we finally picked it and she made me think that we were eating it, but she had really gone to the grocery store and bought one. So when she passed away, I kept thinking, I didn't want to do a traditional funeral. I was going to do a memorial. I'm like, where should we do it? And I thought, oh, Alice's garden. So I called Venus, and she let us have it there. And then she led people through a prayer walk through the garden.
Oh, cool.
And my kids, oh my God, they just were like running through the grass. You know, so it was just such a celebration of my mom's life. And it was a way for them to have a positive, my kids have a really positive memory of that day, because they were able to like frolic, you know, at their grandma's memorial. But people like Venus make those experiences possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on the outside of Alice's Garden, on the outside of that fence, you have no idea how beautiful it is in there once you go in there. And it's just like a different world. And the fact that people just cultivate those experiences for each other. Everywhere I go in Milwaukee, I have like little experiences like that that just make me love our community.
Yeah. But
the challenges, it's like we still have so much, right? It's like,
yes, yes.
So many great people here creating great experiences for each other.
Yeah.
Well, and you maybe just have answered. I was just going to ask you, like, if part of what you do is bringing people or wanting people to stay, keeping people in Milwaukee, what is dreamy about Milwaukee for you?
You know what, one of the coolest things is that a lot of my work is about, you know, these are ambitious professionals, mostly young, mid to late 20s, 30s, very early 40s. People want to go places, you know, they want to go somewhere in their career. They want to feel like they're making a difference. And proximity to greatness really inspires and emboldens people. So the benefit of being attached to the MMAC is that we have access to all of these, like all these great companies and their CEOs and all these brands and these civic organizations. They know who we are and the work that we do. So when I call folks to say, hey, you know, I could call the mayor and say, you know, I need you to come and talk to us about your career path. Like, how did you get here? That might be hard for some people to organize that conversation. But when the audience is the fuel audience, when it's the talent audience, people say yes. You know, they just respond to them and whatever they need. So if it's, you know, Sarah Smith Pancheri over at Summerfest talking about, you know, she's pretty much grew her career at Summerfest, left and then came back and now she's about to take it over. You know, a conversation with her. We have had conversations with Bob Babish, who this is going to be the first Summerfest without him, but he's been booking those bands for 30 plus years and sharing his story about like how weird Prince was, and you know, like he's like giving us all of the behind the scenes stories. Tim Sheehy, the president of the chamber, who's going to be moving on from the chamber soon and doing something different. There's been times where I just asked him, like, Tim, what's important to being a successful professional? Put that together in some notes and talk to a room full of 50 professionals and tell them what you think. He talked about the spouse that he chose. He talked about opportunities to make more money, but that just didn't align to his professional passions and that he decided to turn down. I mean, he got so deep into his personal experiences. We give people access to those pieces and parts of people that make Milwaukee a distinct place. And these people are iconic. Judge Derek Mosley was one of our first leadership luncheon speakers, and the leadership luncheon speakers pick their own location. We let them pick the venue. He picked the North Side Y. And I said, you know, it's going to be hard to get white folks to come to the North Side Y. He said, okay, let's do it anyway. He said, I'll help you promote it. I'll help you push it. And he did. And we pushed and we pushed and we pushed until that room was completely full. And he said it was the most diverse group that he had ever spoken to. So his whole message was about all of Milwaukee is yours, and don't think one side of town is not for you. All of this belongs to all of us. So it's just the fact that the leadership responds to the call and then they show up and they pour out and give of themselves. And you know what? The members do the exact same thing because they come and break down their own fears and imposter syndrome and vulnerabilities to say, you know, I want to be where you are, but I didn't come from this kind of background, or I don't come from money, or I didn't go to a top school, or whatever it is. And then these conversations start and they realize none of that matters. It's not about that. It really is about, you know, preparing yourself as much as possible with your skills and then answering the call. You know, all of us have that thing that just keeps us up at night. That's like, you need to do this. You need to do this. You need to do. And if you ignore it long enough, it goes away. But if you don't, you know, it becomes a thing. So I think that's what is so exciting about Milwaukee. That is not possible in every city, that kind of accessibility to young talent and to the more senior iconic talent, building that bridge of people in Milwaukee. I've never had a person tell me no to a speaking engagement unless it was some kind of conflict on there. There's never been somebody's like, no, that group's not important enough for me to talk. Not, and I've been doing this for 14 years. I've not seen one person ever say no.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting that when I started. And I'm like, wow, they really do respond,
mm-hmm.
you know, to this group of people. They want to connect with them
mm-hmm.
every time they say, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. There is something about that accessibility factor. You know, one of the things we keep hearing through the podcast is I'm like one person away from the person I need to be able to do the thing that I need to do,
yep.
you know, mm-hmm. and there's something about the smallness of the city that it's good to hear that that's your experience as well.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. What about, how do you create a life in Milwaukee, particularly if you're a person of color in Milwaukee? You know, what do you recommend, or how do you sort of mentor or coach people around that?
Yeah. I think there's when Fuel started, we started as Young Professionals in Milwaukee. We started in 2001 as an organization. So I wasn't there when they were Young Professionals in Milwaukee or YPM, but at that time there were other groups that were kind of cropping up to meet this need. And then each group would have a different niche to serve different needs. So there's Fuel Milwaukee, there's Newaukee, there is Social X, and there's Hispanic Professionals of Milwaukee. And there are other groups that cater to people based on the industry that they work in, and you know, other and new groups coming up for like creatives. I think you have to find a network and find the people who want to do this work. Some people are just joiners and some people aren't. There's folks that are going to like meet their spouse in college, get married, have some kids, and we'll never see them. You know, like they buy a house and that's it. And that's what they do. And that's fine because that's the kind of life that they want. But more of us are joiners and are seeking some sort of community. And I think it takes a little bit of courage to do, you know, to step out that first time and join some of these networks and start attending events. But it really does create a sense of community, and you start to see people over and over again. And then you just got to make friends. So I think about Fuel as being like the way that grownups make friends. Mm-hmm. In Milwaukee, because a lot of people that are from Milwaukee have the same friends that they had, you know, like, oh, this is my best friend. We met in the third grade. I mean, that's the story for a lot of mm-hmm. native Milwaukeeans. But half of our Fuel members aren't from Milwaukee. Half of the talent that's here now has come here from a different city. They were recruited by their company. You have to be very deliberate about finding a network and mm-hmm. continuing to be a part of it, because those networks connect you to each other people, but also a lot of them are very intentional about showcasing places in Milwaukee where you can expand and root out from. So now you're going to have a favorite lunch place and a favorite place to have happy hour and a favorite place to take your clients and a favorite coffee place. Like, you need all of those elements. The worst thing that a person can do is just get an apartment, go to work, and then go back to that apartment. Once you get in that rut, you're not really going to experience the fullness of the city. And then people are more likely to take a job elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
In a more transient city where it's easier, you know, you go to DC, it's like new people everywhere. It's like people begging to be your friend. But mm-hmm. Milwaukee, you have to be a little bit more intentional and take that first step sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So people come to your events and I'm presuming there's name tag or their icebreaker. Like, do you make it super intentional for meeting new people as well at these events?
Yeah, I think no matter what, it's these events are always easier for more extroverted people. A lot of times I'll be like scanning the room and I can see where my engineer is. Okay, there's an engineer. Like, let me go save him. You know, like, I think we're mindful to make sure people are interacting, because a lot of personalities just, you know, it's just not easy for everybody to just walk up mm-hmm. to a stranger. So there are some sessions that are easier, like Every year in January, we have a program called Professional Development Bootcamp. It's always the last week of January. And it's several days, in a mix of virtual and in-person now. And all the topics are different. So it might be, you know, how to survive dinner with my boss, or how to put together a meeting that won't put people to sleep, and, you know, how to write a great proposal, how to wow them with a presentation. It's just all these different areas that we can go into. We've had sales for non-salespeople. So all of these really fun topics that are relevant to anyone that's a professional. Well, those are easier to go to because you walk in and there's like 30 minutes of networking as opposed to the whole thing being, you know, if you go to a happy hour event, it's 2 hours of something that like might be challenging, but walk in for the first 30 minutes, you know, grit your teeth through that. And then you're going to sit down and enjoy this content together. Well, the networking after the program is much easier because now you have something to talk to folks about. You've all shared this experience together. If you keep doing that, you know, over and over again, everybody gets a name tag, and there's all kinds of different events. Some of them are around, like, we're just going to look at a cool place in the city. We're going to learn about a new development. We're going to get on a double decker, you know, bus and drive through the city with each other and learn about different landmarks in the city. Some of it is about history, professional development. I mean, just anything interesting and intriguing about Milwaukee, we can turn it into an event, and we did. But it's a way to pull folks together. You just got to do it. Even the introverts, we got something for, you know, something for everybody. It's not always going to be easy, but it gets easier if it's something that makes folks nervous.
Yeah. And just for any listeners who may be hearing this and thinking, oh, I'd like to come, what is it like? You have to be between 20 and 41?
Not anymore.
Can we come?
I was going to say, here's where we ask, are we too old to join your club?
Nope. You know why? Because once I turn 40, I'm like, the rules are changing.
Yes.
It's great. 40 is the new 20, people.
Well, you know what naturally happened? Because when we started in you know, 2001, so then it was like the 20-something, like millennials then were 20. Well, millennials are 40 years old now and bulk of the workforce. So Gen Z is still coming in, but most of them are not out of school yet. So I think at the time that we started, there was this fear that all the baby boomers were just going to retire. And they were a huge cohort numbers wise. And, you know, for that generation,
And
fear was that they were going to retire and then leave this huge gap for millennials to like hurry up and try to get up to management and upper management level when we had only been out of school for a couple of years. So every major city in the United States created a young professionals group to retain the ones that they had in town, but to be able to attract people from other cities too. Like, we're going to entice you with this really cool program. Well, we did the same thing. Well, then in 2008, there's a recession and the boomers don't leave. So it slowed everything down, and things that we were really scared about, a lot of it didn't happen. So I think people started to attend the fuel events thinking, or the original thought was, oh, this is really going to be attractive to young professionals. But none of the subject matter was age specific. It just continued to be interesting to people. So there was not this natural attrition of folks. When people have kids, they fall off for a couple of years and then come back once the kids are back in school or whatever, but they still come back. We've really moved away from that. This is a young professional group. We changed the name to Fuel Milwaukee. And the focus is really on talent and engagement. So engaging talent for their own personal enjoyment, but also because we enrich each other so much. So all these Gen Zers are going to come into these networks and have the benefit of, you know, older millennials now that have been we've been the YPs. We know all about it. We know how you feel. We've been talked about. We've been called lazy. And we get it. We understand. Come along, young whippersnapper. Let me show you how it's done.
Right.
Is that kind of thing. I think every YP group that was a YP group, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, you'll see all of them start to transition away from that language because it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you heard that, Gen Xers. We're welcome.
That's right.
We're still welcome.
That's awesome.
Well, cool. I've learned so much. And thanks so much for being a dream maker in our city. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I really love just that idea of making the city belong to everybody, you mm-hmm. know, and helping people to see the ways in which we might create walls for ourselves, and you know, that we enforce walls for other people that we might not intend to, you know. So how can we open up a little bit more and get people crossing those freeways and
those bridges? And yeah,
those bridges, right?
Yes. Yeah.
We do have a series of some rapid fire questions here that are fun.
Okay.
If you're game for
okay,
it.
Okay. So wait, what are the rules? What do I have to do?
Oh, we don't really have rules.
Yeah, no rules.
Is it just like a one word response or just a quick response?
No, we're cool.
Okay. We're cool. I was like, wait, pressure.
We're not Brené Brown.
Yeah, right.
Ambitions, but you know,
yet. All right, your favorite happy hour in Milwaukee?
Brownstone.
Ooh. Brownstone,
where's that?
It's on Water Street.
Oh, all right, been a few decades since I've been to
Brownstone Social Lounge. It's really cool.
Oh, ooh. Nice. I'll have to check that out when I'm not in bed by 7:45.
Well, happy hour is 4 o'clock, Megan.
That's true.
You can drink and then get the if you're a pasta, the Diablo pasta.
Ooh,
mm-hmm.
It's so good. It's simple. It's got way too much cheese in it, but it's so good. But if you're low carb, then the wings are amazing.
Okay. So, right. Ooh.
Good to know.
What about a favorite venue in town for hosting parties or hosting these get-togethers?
Turner Hall
mm-hmm.
is becoming a fave for me. I like everything about it. I like the way the floors creak. I like the food in the Turning Tables restaurant downstairs. The food is amazing. It is just the perfect combination of like elegant and rustic. I feel like it elevates the look of every kind of event that you're doing there. I mean, and there's so many cool venues, but that's the one that I'm really excited about right now.
Yay. Yeah, we had Emerald on as one of our guests last season. She's awesome. And the Diverse Dining, hopefully you can bring a group of folks to that one of her events there. Those are fun.
They do a great job.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, a perfect day in Milwaukee.
Ooh, take the kids to Cops, then drive to the lakefront, walk along the lake, and then we have to go and eat. I probably would take them somewhere where we could sit outside. Ooh, Cubanitas.
They have an outdoor?
Yeah, they do. They do.
The downtown one?
Yep.
When it's not snowing.
When it's not snowing, you can sit outside. And then, you know, they open, I don't know if it's the garage door or whatever it is. You know how they can open the entrance to the
At the front.
And you can still feel like you're outside, even if you're
I love that.
They have that element going too. But I love that the whole vibe. But sometimes they're in there dancing and it's just a real cool, chill vibe. My daughter would insist that we go to the movies probably. And then that I would take her to the cafe. No, it's like the movie cafe. Is that what they call it? In Brookfield. Mm. But it's the Marcus. It's one of the Marcus movie theaters. And you can, you know, watch a 3D movie or whatever. Then they bring the food to you.
Yeah.
She really likes that kind of stuff. And then we would get in the car and laugh all the way home and I make him go to sleep.
Awesome.
What about a hidden gem in Milwaukee?
What's a hidden gem in Milwaukee? I feel like I've been telling people this is a hidden gem, and maybe I've said it so much I don't feel like it's as hidden anymore.
You need a new hidden gem.
You know what? I'm gonna do a throwback to my childhood and say Haven Woods.
Yeah.
It is. I take my kids in there sometimes, and I think it's been sometimes when they were really little, they got it. They were like, yeah, they were like running on the trail and there's rocks and trees and just, you know, it's just so beautiful. Now they probably be like, Mom, why are we in the woods?
I do. I remember going there thinking, how do more people not know it? Why is this not packed? Like, it is like a little hidden gem in the city.
It really is.
I feel like I was just in my own, like, I would be running through there and creating little storylines in my mind of like, I'm on an adventure or I'm on a safari. And it's the best place to be a kid. I mean, yeah. We picked blackberries and ate blackberries. I mean, it was just so much fun to be on.
Yeah. It really is a beautiful place. And almost every time I've been there, it's been like, I feel like I'm the only one there.
Yeah.
You know, like a little desolate. But, you know, we have baseball players, Megan and I. And so there's a lot of baseball tournaments that happen at the Schenecker. Is that what it's called?
Is that what it is?
That sounds
right. Yeah. So anybody out there that is a baseball friend, if you have a baseball tournament there, take them, you know, go wander through Havenwoods. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
We used to run around the bases nobody, you know, that grew up would play baseball, but we used to go out there and run the bases. And I mean, it was just a cool place to just dream and imagine. And I watch my kids do that too. So I really enjoy that.
That's cool. What about your favorite Milwaukee park?
What I want to say is Noyes, because I used to swim there all the time when I was little, but I don't know if it's called that anymore. It might be called
something called?
Different.
Noyes?
Noyes. So it was like the place where we would all go to swim. And then there was the park where people would have barbecues and stuff. Now, where I go more often now is Estabrook.
Mm. Oh, sure.
For like, if we're going to do something now, that's where I would go because it's closer to my home. But Noyes, it's got to be called something different now. Hmm. But it's like seared in my memory as like that was the place to go and like mess up your hair and get in trouble. Because the parents didn't have to be, you know, like I think about stuff that we did as kids, like ride our bike to the swimming pool and swim and come home all messed up. And my kids do. They're never out of my sight. Ride your bike to the swimming pool. No, I would never, you know, but we used to just be free. But that's one of the places that I remember we would just go and just have a ball.
Yeah, it's an indoor pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still is Noyes.
It is.
Yeah. Is it like up by Granville? Like on the north? Yeah. Okay.
So there's an adjoining outdoor space to it. That the outdoor space probably has another name. But in my mind, they're all together in my mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
On Good Hope, 82nd Good Hope. Mm-hmm. There we go. Wow. Well, cool. The delights never end in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah.
Go on and on.
Well, the last question that we have been asking everyone is, because this is about dreams and dreamers and women in particular in Milwaukee, who do you see in Milwaukee as a woman who maybe has inspired you or who you see as living her dream or as a dream maker or maybe just starting and, you know, just starting on her dream?
The first person that came to mind was Mary Ellen Stanek. And the second person was Julie Granger. Julie is somebody I work with at MMAC. She's our executive vice president. And I remember when I first came to MMAC, I had to interview with her. And she said, well, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I said, where you are.
Yes.
Take your spot, girl.
Like, you're hired.
Julie is an excellent communicator, and she took the YWCA's Unlearning Racism course years before it was in vogue and before it was popular, the thing to do. Mm-hmm. And she works with me on MMAC's Region of Choice Workplace Inclusion and Equity Initiative. She really kicked off that work and has been leading it and is, you know, transitioned it to me. But I've really, really enjoyed working with her, learning from just how efficient she is. how swiftly she moves to get things done. I mean, she really knows how to make things happen. Mm. And she's a very like low key, subtle personality, but like super powerful and really effective. Mm-hmm. You know, like she's that, like she's not the one that's going to be making the hoopla in the room, but she's become one of my favorite people. Mary Ellen Static, because she just works in the world of finance and money, and she's just super cool and easy in terms of her personality. But I know the level of stress and complexity in her job has got to be crazy. But she's always approachable, always easy to talk to, always very respectful, and gives off a really caring energy. And I think I admire those things in both of those women, and hope that, you know, people have the same impression of me, that I'm easy to talk to and easy to learn from. And, you know, I just really enjoy that when I see it in others. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely experienced that with you today. Yes, for sure. Yeah. Corey. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thanks for being you. You were like really responsive to our requests to be on the show. And, you know, it sometimes can be like, you know, we have to track people down sometimes. Right. So thanks for being so responsive and for reflecting that generosity of spirit that you see in Milwaukee. We see it in you for sure.
Mm-hmm. I get it. And I respect what you're doing. And I love hearing other people's stories. So I can't wait to kind of scour your website.
Yeah. There's some fun ones in there. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And I think the point that, you know, that we share in common is that we love Milwaukee and we want people to stay and explore and dream here. You know, that's what a little piece of this podcast is, not only sharing stories of our guests, but also hoping to inspire Milwaukeeans to live their dream and to see that it's, you know, like we were talking about Milwaukee being a sort of a big fish in a small pond, that you can live your dreams. They can come true here, you know, whereas sometimes in big cities it's harder. So thank you for sharing your story and being a part of this. This has been fun.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, that was fun. Oh my gosh. Oh, I don't think I've laughed as much in a few weeks.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
With all these snow days.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, for people that are having any hesitation venturing out into social situations post-COVID, you know, sounds like Fuel makes them accessible and easy to, to, you know, get to know people, get back in the in-person social scene.
Yeah. And like we talked about, you know, we always say we're only one person away from who you need to know. Boy, this is an organization that is probably has the people you need to know. So a great way, if you're working on a dream, if you need some advice or connections or networking, you know, yeah. I think this is the place to go for it. And I loved it. I think in the beginning, she talked about just running towards what makes you nervous. I was trying to think, what would the lesson be from this episode? And I feel like that's Yeah. You know, just do what sometimes makes you uncomfortable, you know, get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Yeah. And also like, listen to your own, like it's our vulnerabilities that will connect us to other people. Right. So she talked about in the early days of COVID, like what was it that she was nervous about or curious about? And then starting to talk about that publicly, right? And sure enough, people responded because everybody was thinking that, you know?
Yes, yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
I wanted to say this the whole time. Today, the day that we're recording this, I'm pretty sure is the day that quarantine started in Milwaukee 3 years ago.
That's right.
I remember like getting a text message from our kids' school in between meetings that said, school will be called virtual for 2 weeks. And was like, what?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I didn't say this in our interview either, but I think I was at that same performance that she was at the rep, because I can remember at intermission, we turned on our phones and that was when the NBA was like, we're canceling this game. Oh, like, man. And everybody, you know, you could hear all the whispers in the theater. Yeah. And we're, you know, all of a sudden you start looking around and one person behind you coughs and you're like,
ah! And you're like, right. Totally. Totally.
So, yeah,
but you know, vulnerabilities, the things that you are, you know, the problems you're trying to solve or the insecurities that you have, there's likely somebody out there that's struggling with the same thing. And there's real connection that can happen when, you know, we open up about those things. So,
yeah. Yeah. So get out to one of their events if you can. The website, fuelmilwaukee.org, where you can check out the events that they have coming up. You could also check out MMAC's website, also MMAC.org. We'll put links to their socials in our show notes, as well as links to any new events that they have coming up that she can tell us about for the spring. But be brave. Take yourself out there. Slap on a name tag. Make a new friend. I feel like Milwaukee is good. Smallwaukee is good for those kinds of things. And Cori Jo is one of the people making that happen. You heard how easy it was for us to have this conversation with her. I can only imagine how much fun she would be at a happy hour. So,
and apparently she's looking out for those introverts at those events to save them. So,
yeah. So engineers, you are welcome. Get out there. All right. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen, when we bring back another Milwaukee dream maker.
Until then, keep on dreaming. Okie dokie, listeners, we have a special call to action for you today.
Nothing to do with Cream City Dreams podcast, except it has to do with one of our previous guests.
One of our first guests, Ashley Valentine over at Rooted, put out a call to action for all Milwaukeeans who love books and who love racial equity and who want to support small business. She needs some support, people.
She needs some support. So what can you do to help her? Check out the post, which we'll put in our show notes, where she asks for some help, and think about what you can do to support. Buy some books.
Volunteer your time. Donate. Buy merch.
All the things. Help her out. RootedMKE.com.
Meet you on Bleat.
Meet you on Bleat. It's so worth your time.
Go, Ashley. We're rooting for you. Oh, rooting for Ashley. You. Ah, didn't even try that.